episode 121 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded February 23rd, 2017. Screwed up. Characters in these shows, Randy, they're pretty screwed up.
I would say all the shows have screwed up people in them.
A lot of people with baggages and issues, just like Kyle.
Screwed up, we're talking about Tool Time on Home Improvement?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yes, yeah, so those kinds
screwed
of screwed.
Yeah. Baggage issues.
When's Home Improvement getting its Netflix resurrection?
God.
I mean,
is that really what we're needing?
Real Rob got one, so I feel like why not Tim Taylor?
We need the Taylors, yeah. I imagine all of those sons are doing nothing.
Rehab is what I figure they're doing.
Where's JTT?
It's Tool Time in America. Actually, so you know how in the, what are they doing? They're remaking The Lion King and James Earl Jones is coming back to do Mufasa. I was like, are they going to bring back
Jonathan Taylor Thomas and Matthew Broderick?
Baby Simba, yeah.
But apparently they have Donald Glover doing the adult voice. Yep. I would assume he's doing the adult voice.
He might be doing both.
Maybe.
Nice.
Maybe he'll just go like this for the kid.
He'll put some helium in.
I think that's all they do. They just suck a little helium.
That's Mickey Mouse, not the Lion King.
Oh, I'm so confused on Disney.
You have kids. You're supposed to know all things Disney.
I actually am an expert, so. enough fooling around, guys. We are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And I'm Kyle.
And this week we are talking about a bunch of, like we said, screwed up people. We have the shows on HBO, Crashing and Pretty Little Liars.
Nope. Big Little Lies.
Big Little Lies. I've made that mistake
all
week. Is
that Pretty Little Liars?
Pretty Little Liars is the CW show.
What is this one?
So many of our fans are like...
Big Little Lies,
right?
Oh,
no. This is my only chance to get them to talk about that show I liked.
In my write-up, I totally wrote Pretty Little Liars.
But it's Big Little Lies.
Did
you accidentally watch Pretty Little Liars?
Shit. I'm going to be talking about the completely wrong show.
I watched four seasons of that show.
Such a dedication. Over on AMC, we're going to be talking about Humans, which has just returned for its second season. And, of course, we have to talk at least a little bit about Legion over on FX.
Because it's the best.
We do recognize that... the other show on our network, Marvel Binge on TV, is talking about Legion week to week, but we also need our fix, guys.
Yes.
We need it. So we're
going to get a few words in.
Yeah.
And our show drops before theirs, so we get the first word.
Oh, nice. Oh. That's a good thing. We do this on Thursdays, release it on Friday. But before we get into all that, guys... Just a quick reminder to you guys listening out there. If you guys want to help us out, go to iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating. Write us a review. We will read that review on the site or on the episode here. And that's a great way to help us out. Another way you guys can help us out is over at patreon.com/TVDudes. There you guys can make a per episode pledge. Think about like giving us $1 an episode, $2. Just like, you know, think about what you get from us in a month. And how much is that worth to you?
Yeah.
If you like giving a tip to your barista for making coffee, we'll take $1 tip per episode. That'd be great.
And we'll make you some coffee. I mean, we can't give it to you over the podcast network, but you can like get a coffee somewhere and pretend we gave it to you.
Yes.
But pay for it because that's otherwise it's stealing.
Moving on.
No, Grant.
Shit.
You're forgetting a third way that they can promote us.
All right. What is it?
Well, you know how there's that... you know the Olympic sport of luge?
I'm well aware of the luge.
You know there's like a land luge kind of thing where you like, get like a skateboard kind of thing, you lie down in the street and go down a hill?
You remember that movie Airborne with Seth Green and Jack Black?
I do not.
Okay, well there's a great scene. Of course you do. You were a skater boy in the 90s.
Luge. So if you were going to land luge somewhere in your town, you could put a flag on your luge that says the TV Dudes. People are going to watch that shit on YouTube.
You are getting more and more obscure. I mean, are you just riffing?
Yes.
Or I would love to think that you plan these out like meticulously.
I have a list of 50 ideas and I'm just rolling them all out. No, I'm just riffing.
The first rule of riffing, we're always riffing.
It's impressive. Oh, and before we move on to our listener questions, we need to do our little weekly shout out to one of our fellow shows on Permanent Record Network.
Permanent Record. So we are talking about This Is Us with Key and Clyde this month, and you may not know about This Is Us. It's a obscure little show that's been renewed for 3 seasons across NBC. Yeah.
It's pretty big.
It's pretty big. Like, everybody's talking about this show except for us. But fortunately, Key and Clyde are talking about it on our network, and they do this great show. Key and Clyde are a married couple. They're a lot of fun. They talk about sort of what these, you know, about this show that's about relationships. It's about, you know, a family. How much? Well, we can spoil a little about the premise, right? That it's like a family of, it's like people who were raised together. Mm-hmm. They were like triplets, and now they all have their lives. So it's a little bit sort of like a dramatic version of Modern Family in some ways. And Key and Clyde go in depth on every episode, and so you should give that a listen.
Yeah, go check it out on permanentrecord.com, which is RCRD for record, or you can go check it out at their site, keyandclyde.com, K-E-I and C-L-Y-D-E. Well, going on, we're going to go jump over to our listener questions here. If you guys like us on Facebook once a week, Randy puts up a little post there, and you guys can give us your questions.
And sometimes I'll put the name of the actual shows we're doing, like Big Little Lies instead of Pretty Little Liars.
Did you put it up there?
I put Big Little Lies on there.
Big Little Lies. Man, seriously, I'm going to have to go check HBO because I feel like you're messing with me.
But I was paranoid for about 2 seconds there, Grant, that I had written Pretty Little Liars on the question and comment. So I was very happy to go look and see that I got it right.
I'll tell you one complaint I have about that show. Anyway, first question comes to us from our buddy Zach McLernan, who says, one of the distinctions I have noticed in animation in both Eastern and Western traditions is how violence tends to be handled. Specifically in terms of how severe violence in Western animation tends to be handled through facsimile. For example, in Western, or perhaps more specifically American animation, characters are rarely seen physically losing limbs in battle, and if it is, this is generally done to robotic or non-human proxies, as seen in like the Clone Wars and the prequels in general, or Samurai Jack. If violence does occur that is severe to an actual person, it tends to happen off-screen or is executed in a panaway to reveal a covered stump. Eastern animation, however, is much less restricted, and many have argued this has been one of the core reasons why anime has retained some degree of popularity in Western audiences, for its shock value and violence juxtaposed against Western animation. With all this being said, is Western animation's tendency toward robot violence a detraction in quality, or does it bear merit against some of the anime's more ridiculous and arguably pointless excesses?
Okay, that was an in-depth and very well thought out question, and I feel like you should only give like a fart noise. Like, I'm not gonna do any better in terms of responding, but I'm gonna try. I think the fallacy here in your question is it's not Eastern and Western animation. You're talking about cartoons made for younger audiences and cartoons made for older audiences, because Clone Wars and Samurai Jack are both aimed, not new Samurai Jack, which is Adult Swim, but both those are aimed at sort of teenage and younger. So that's why they're being kind of cagey on the violence. Whereas someone like, say, I don't know, what's an anime? Ghost in the Shell? Akira? Oh,
you want an American one?
Those are all...
Spawn or something? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. That was certainly
those are bloody and brutal. I was trying to think of like other animation.
Archer,
that is...
I believe, has like just had people's limbs come off.
Yeah, I think it's... In that particular case, I think you're talking about it. You're talking about audiences, so not so much as the style of that particular animation. That said, as to whether or not it's better or worse, I'm almost always of the opinion that the less you show, if you can still get it across, the better. Like, you can, it's restraint is a tool that is important. And I think if someone can do something good with restraint, it's more impressive than someone who can do something without any restraints.
If you watched The Crown on Netflix, which my man Kyle here did.
It's so good.
You know that not saying something is much more difficult than saying something.
I thought maybe someone's hand got chopped off.
The burden of responsibility.
Oh, you'll remember the scene where Prince Philip, he's in that battle royale, and
I didn't
battle royale.
Somebody cut his hand off. He dropped his sonic screwdriver.
Oh, see, I didn't watch all the way through The Crown. I didn't see the lightsaber battle.
Oh, you didn't watch the Crown. You gotta get back on that. Gotta get back on it.
Zach McLernan, you also have a follow up question asking about us commenting potentially on recent political news, which I would say, hey, If you want to check out us over on Patreon, once again, a reminder to all you listeners, occasionally we do delve into political topics, and you know what? We might go ahead and discuss that a little bit on this week's Patreon episode.
We might. I don't like to talk about politics, so
we could talk about.
You love it.
We could talk about pop stars.
We could also talk about pop stars.
Pop stars and politics.
This might be a weird grab bag Patreon episode for you guys. Our next question comes to us from Nick Thies, who says, "Oh, sweet guys,
yes,
it's another update.
The chronicle continues.
An update in our ongoing saga of Nick trolling his friend and his friend's mom with his Game of Thrones account and password. This week's Game of Thrones revenge update," he says, "I took inspiration from Kyle last week and sent my friend a letter that
demands...
The other
Kyle, not me.
That demands he share his Netflix account with me in exchange for the HBO password. Little does he know that I also sent his mother a letter making the same deal for their Hulu password, as well as an embarrassing fact about my friend, which I can use for leverage. As they have still not watched the latest season, they were both very confused by the pink paper I use." That's a spoiler, dude. "Each letter also states that if my demands are not met, I will mail their Game of Thrones season 1-3 Blu-ray set back to them, one scuffed disc at a time."
Oh.
"By the way, I also borrowed their Game of Thrones season 1-3 Blu-rays. What are some good TV Blu-ray collections that I can get as sorry I terrorized you for the sake of a podcast question post gift?"
Oh, this is so good.
He also takes another request for any ideas we might have for the next step in his diabolical scheme.
I think the next step is to get another house involved. So you need to find a friend who's on board with this kind of thing, who will take your side and arrange for them to betray you at some point to the others.
Yes.
Yeah, you like make prearrange for him that you're going to loan him a DVD that you're going to set up as their gift and give it to him, and then he will give it to one of them. You're essentially giving them the gift, but in the meta, he is betraying you by giving them that gift.
And then give him a snow cone and say, "Winter is coming."
By the way, I feel like a good Blu-ray gift for sorry I terrorized you for the sake of a podcast question post is Archer. Because that's the kind of thing that that they would appreciate, that kind of thing.
Agreed. That would be a fantastic one. Please keep us posted, Nick, because this is engrossing and very amusing.
It's honestly better than anything else we do on our podcast.
Shlomo Willick asks us, what show would you consider the network version of Game of Thrones? I think it's the CW's The Originals. It does not have the same production value, but it has the same type of complex, morally ambiguous characters, and no one is safe.
I'm not sure I believe you. I like the CW, but I'm not sure they have anything that's comparable to the Game of Thrones in any way, but I haven't seen it. It's possible. I would say The Expanse.
You know what? I was going to say the same thing.
That's not network.
Sci-Fi's not network?
No, he's right. Sci-Fi's not network.
It's cable, guys.
I know what network wants it to be.
Yeah.
That show Emerald City that we saw.
Oh.
But Game of Thrones, it is not.
Well, I don't watch enough network TV.
Yeah, like what? Like Michael Gustini chimes in and says he would add Rain and the 100. And he echoes the sentiment that damn CW has some good shows.
CW has some good shows.
I'm honestly actually not familiar with any of these. I mean, I know the basic premise, but I haven't watched any of them.
Yeah, I can't think of anything TV, anything network wise that I would put even in that category. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, we are dropping the ball on this question.
Yeah, I got no answer.
We should have thought about that before we read the question.
Is it Empire? Is the answer Empire?
It might be.
It's always Empire, right?
Sure, right.
Yeah, if I was just reading titles, I'd be like, yeah, that's it. Game of Thrones,
sounds
Empire.
Like an Empire, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of Michael Gustini, he asks, what was the most disappointed you've been by a friend or family member's reaction to a show you recommended to them? Made my dad watch Rick and Morty, and he said it was one of the stupidest things he's ever seen.
I don't feel bad, dude. I have a feeling if I recommend to my dad, he would have the same reaction.
Yeah, it's just not meant for everyone.
It's not a show for dads.
Yeah, I made my dad a mixtape once back when I just, like, the CD burner was kind of a new cool thing. And I was like, here, I'll make you a bunch of songs. I believe I put in 3-6 Mafia's Ass and Titties in there. He did not appreciate that one.
I was
a bad call on my part.
I was watching Dexter, and my mom was watching, and she actually afterwards was like, oh, that's a really good show. And I'm like, no, Mom, that was the season finale. That was the worst episode of Dexter ever. You don't know what you're talking about.
And the funny thing is, I can't think of anything, but I know I've had this thing where I'll recommend something to a friend, and they'll be like, eh, it was all right. And I'm like, no, it wasn't all right. It's the best show on TV. How do you not love it? But I can't think of a specific example.
I mean, I know you guys aren't these people, but believe it or not, there are some people out there that don't love Lost. They don't love it like the way you need to love that show. Lost is the greatest show that's ever been on television, bar none. And there are some people that, like, you know, I used to do a weekly show where I would review it. It was called Lost with Grant.
Lost with Grant.
Or Grant is Lost. Or it changed occasionally, but it was mainly Lost with Grant.
You had a theme song.
I did. And I would dedicate myself to just talking passionately about that show. And then people would be like, I checked out that show because of you. Meh. And I'm just like, crushed. Anyway.
Yeah.
Thanks for bringing up terrible memories, Michael Gustini. Jonathan Haptemichael. He says, hi, dudes. Do you think HBO is trolling us with The Young Pope and Big Little Lies? I know that Vinyl wasn't great, but it was better than these two shows.
Oh, my gosh.
Damn.
Are you serious about Young Pope? Has this kid watched it? Because I binge finished Young Pope.
Jonathan, right?
Yeah. I've never met Jonathan before.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
No. Jonathan, have you watched it, man? Oh, my gosh. I love the way that show ended. I mean, it went in a totally different direction than
Does he get really old?
No, he doesn't get old, but he's the exact opposite how you think. It goes in a totally different direction.
Does he get younger?
No, like, but
is this a Benjamin Button thing?
He's a extremely hyper-conservative, terrible, like, megalomaniac pope.
So there is no aging-related stuff.
A hyper-conservative megalomaniac, but then when you get to the end of the season, you realize, whoa, all these things he did that seemed very hyper-conservative and megalomania-ish, they all, like, brought these people into these right, you know, situations to be able to do good things and become better people. And then the show leaves you thinking, like, maybe this guy can really talk to God, because there's times where he prays and stuff happens and there's no, like, hiding it. Like, they're insinuating that, like, oh, he prayed and God did something.
It's the new John from Cincinnati.
It's the West Wing, but in the Vatican.
That's the West Wing
of the Vatican.
There you go.
I don't know. The Young Pope did not resonate with me, but I will say this. Near to Big Little Lies, which we'll talk about later, I will say this. Given the choice, I would watch a second episode of Young Pope or Big Little Lies over Vinyl. That was a hot mess.
I didn't even watch the first episode of that.
Yeah, it was a mess.
Vinyl was just so long, and it was just so full of itself.
I was excited for that.
What was better, Vinyl or Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll?
Oh, God.
Do we have to pick?
Is hitting yourself in the hammer with a... hitting your groin in the hammer an option? Because that's better than either
one. What's the Sophie's choice of, like, two piles of shit?
Yes, yeah.
Do I have to pick either?
You know what? I actually have an answer. The answer is Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, because it's only a half hour.
I found the
loophole.
Last question comes to us from Paul Mampilli, who says, so here's a question for you guys. Who are your favorite TV neighbors? Mine's a toss-up between Kramer from Seinfeld and Flanders from The Simpsons.
That is a pretty wide spectrum.
I know. Kyle's.
What is it? The neighbor in Home Improvement?
Yes. Al, right?
The guy behind the fence.
Yeah.
I remember there was an episode where they ran into him out in the street, and he had, like, popsicle sticks up in front of his face.
That was a running gag. You know, they used to show, because it was filmed in front of a live studio audience. They used to show, and that actor would come out when he did his curtain call, and he had a little portable fence that he carried with him. It was like a running gag. It was probably the funniest thing about Home Improvement.
Pretty great neighbor there.
Wasn't that good? What about Khan from shit.
Star Trek Wrath of Khan?
No.
That's not a shit name.
King of the Hill. King of the Hill.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Khan's a pretty good.
Yeah. I'm going to mention Cheers. It's later on, but...
they don't have neighbors.
John, their upstairs neighbor, the guy who ran the Melvilles.
Fair enough, they do have neighbors.
He was a good neighbor. He was a funny character.
I do not remember him at all.
No, it's later on in the series. One of their neighbors. I mean, Simpsons, you could go all kinds of like, is technically, is Apu a neighbor or not? Mm-hmm.
He's all, in the neighborhood.
They're all neighbors, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Apu be your guy?
Apu's pretty great.
Hmm. I think there's a really obvious answer here. The best all-time TV neighbor is Mr. Rogers. Tell me I'm wrong.
He's not wrong.
I don't know.
He's just an asshole.
What about Larry from Three's Company? That is the quintessential wacky neighbor.
Oh.
He may be the template upon which all wacky neighbors are based. He was always getting Jack into trouble.
Kramer was a pretty good call.
Kramer's pretty good.
Yeah. That's like the guy at the party who has the perfect answer. Then he asks the question. Everybody's like, well, you already thought of the best answer.
Yeah.
what are we supposed to say? Kramer was the answer. All right, let's take a break.
Some really exciting news here.
Yeah, what we got?
I'm a pretty big fan of this guy, Ian Rayon, from Game of Thrones. You probably know him as Ramsay Bolton. He was also in Misfits.
We gotta go back. His name again.
Did you not catch that? It's Ewan Rayon.
Ewan Rayon. It's a weird spelling name.
It's a little difficult, but I mean, everybody's going to know it after this.
Yeah.
But no, he is set to star in a Marvel and ABC's drama adaptation of The Inhumans as Maximus.
Yeah.
Which, people who follow the storyline, this is a pretty important character. This is Black Bolt's brother.
Maximus the Mad.
And yeah, I'm thinking
he's their Loki.
You got the perfect villain.
It's basically Loki, right?
Yeah, he's their Loki.
They describe him as his evil brother, who's a trickster. I'm like, what?
You gotta remember, Stan Lee was writing like 100 comics a month, so you know.
Oh man,
I am kind of a big fan of what they're doing with Inhumans in the comics right now, and I think there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah,
it's kind of like Legion or kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy. In the sense that all it takes is somebody who really gets it or has an even better idea than what's currently being done to make everybody fall in love with this. And this casting right here makes me think they're on the right track.
Yeah, I agree. I don't really have any expectations this is going to be good. ABC and Marvel has not been great so far, and the Shield's been pretty bad. But this is great casting for Maximus.
It's going to be watered down. It's going to be garbage. I'm not hopeful for the show itself. But I do like the actor himself. He was great in Misfits. He was fantastic in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, he plays a perfect bastard. He's the great casting for Maximus.
He was also a lovable sweetheart in Misfits. Mm. Oddly, complete opposite character.
Oh, you didn't find to be a lovable sweetheart in Game of Thrones?
No.
He also did Creepy in Misfits for a little short little run there.
That's true, yeah.
You know who else is lovable? Is that Murtaugh and Riggs team up? Oh, Lethal Weapon 2 got renewed for a second season. Okay. I'm excited about this one, too.
I will only be excited the second season is about them taking on a South African drug lord who is using apartheid as a cover for his drug smuggling. I want them to adapt season 2 as Lethal Weapon 2.
You know what? If you're being serious in that.
I am being serious. That'd be amazing.
I don't know. I think they'd screw it up.
That's probably true. Like, are you still watching it? I haven't been watching it.
I watch it every week.
Wow, really?
It's like one of my shows now. I'm really into it. And the thing is, they keep dangling this, like, Riggs never gets his, Riggs never kind of resolves his psychological trauma.
Okay.
And if anything, they kind of build on top of it. There's a great episode where he wakes up with a random woman.
Uh-huh.
And for people who aren't watching the show, aren't familiar with Lethal Weapon, he loses his wife in the first episode. And he's like the guy who keeps wearing the wedding ring and is always thinking about it. But no, he wakes up with another woman and the whole episode, he's just distraught. And then I think you find out at the end of the episode, spoiler, that he didn't even sleep with her. He just passed out next to her. But
we've
little
all
stuff,
been there.
Yeah, little I mean, stuff what? Like that.
You said we've all been there. We're recording. So
Oh.
We know exactly what you said.
Oh. Oh.
Where
do I
been?
Need to delete that?
You should delete that. That's probably a problem. Yeah.
No. Nope. What's next story? In.
What do you guys know about that 11-22-63?
I never finished it, but I did read the book.
It was pretty good. Like, big fan of the miniseries. I'm excited to hear that Stephen King's going back to Hulu. This time, he's taking his buddy J.J. Abrams with him for an adaptation, Castle Rock.
So this isn't necessarily, from what I can tell, an adaptation, because did he write a book called Castle Rock?
No, Castle Rock just features in like eight of his books. It's a fictional town in New Hampshire?
That is a good
or
call.
Or Maine. I think it's Maine.
Maine.
Like, all this stuff is up in Maine.
I don't know. Everything in the East Coast is the same to me.
He put Maine on the map, as far as
I was getting
I
ready
know.
To say, they released this very cryptic teaser this week, and it's prominently features that part of the U.S.
Well, yeah, it mainly... The trailer is... Or the teaser, I guess, it's kind of like intense. It's fun. It's like this winding road, like reminding you of all the scary moments from all of his different books and film adaptations, and how they all kind of take place in this fictional town, Castle Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And they're building up to, is this a miniseries?
It's 10 episodes. It's an anthology miniseries, but some characters may recur across seasons.
This is very cool.
It sounds really interesting. And the question is, like, Salem's Lot, which involves like vampires, and like Gerald's Game, and there's like all these different stories. You know how Dark Tower sort of ties
Shaw's
together all his
Shank,
worlds?
I believe is in
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much of it's gonna be straight up horror or if it's gonna be character stuff, but it'll probably be like creepy. A creepy place, you know, where creepy things happen.
Stand By Me? Does that take place there?
I don't think so. I don't know.
You don't think it's going to be a Stranger...
Retcon. Now it does.
Oh, okay.
You think it's going to be a Stranger Things ripoff? J.J. Abrams only rips off the best stuff.
I do think it's possible there could be some Stranger Things riffs in here, because Stranger Things had Stephen King in its DNA for sure.
Or it could be influenced by the fact that that did so well. They're like, yep, we're definitely going ahead with this project.
Yeah, for sure.
If... I got to be honest, I only picked this story up because Castle Rock is where my family vacations in the summer, and I was so disappointed to find out that he's not making this about Castle Rock Community Campground in Wisconsin.
That would have been very specific. Great for you. Not so much
it could be a spooky
else.
Place, especially at night.
Do you know where the name Castle Rock comes from?
From his books, right?
Town? But do you know where the actual name comes from?
I do not.
It's Castle Grayskull, I think.
Yes, that's what it is. It's a reference. It's actually a reference to another book, and I'm blanking on what it is now. I feel like it was 1984, maybe. I saw this article earlier in the week, and I thought that it was mentioned.
Listeners,
what the name came
you're
from.
Our only hope.
Well, that's a good story, Randy. That's a great story.
Sorry.
For our live podcast.
It's not in this link that I found. I'm sorry. I can't know what to tell
you. We're recording this live. All of our commenters are really angry right now.
Oh. Come to you live.
Actually, if we were doing that, they would tell us what the answer is.
That's actually true. But I will say the showrunner on this is Sam Shaw and Dustin Thomason, who worked on Manhattan, which I think was WGN's show.
Oh, if it was A to Z, I'd be on board.
But I heard it was good.
Oh, that Manhattan.
Not Manhattan Love Story. Good God. Okay. Oh, my God.
I was thinking the other thing.
No, Manhattan Love Story. That was tragic.
Right. I did hear good things about Manhattan.
Yeah,
you
me
said
too.
WGN, right?
WGN.
Yeah.
I just don't watch WGN, so you know.
Missed opportunity.
I know.
We'll have to go back and check it out. If we ever have time.
Wait a second. But real quick, we got to end on some good news.
Yes, what else we got?
We can't just be talking about all the scary stuff happening in TV.
True.
For the third week straight, Colbert is like most watched late night program, beating Jimmy Fallon, who had it before him.
Yeah. Take that, Fallon.
Yeah, that'll teach you to sing with Justin Timberlake.
I don't know. I guess the joke that everybody was saying before the election that Trump would be like the best thing to happen to comedy. I mean, it's kind of true. Like, if it wasn't for all the stuff that he had to talk about, his show wouldn't be so popular right now.
But the problem is it's also the best thing for Prozac. They did it really well. I don't know. But yeah, that is impressive. Like, it seemed like it would make sense that you avoid politics and just steer for general conversation. But as we've seen, as anyone who has any conversation with anyone else in the world right now is well aware, you can't avoid that topic of conversation. It is everywhere. It's omnipresent. And steering into the curve just makes more sense. So Stephen Colbert seems to be doing that. Seth Meyers seems to be doing that.
Yeah.
And both of them to great effect. And it seems to be really kind of helping out them.
And James Corden and Jimmy Fallon, they're just being silly.
And it's silly's pretty good
James
though.
James Corden appeal at all.
For real? People like singing.
I kind of like his show.
People
yeah.
like singing
at all.
I don't know. I'm just. Are you I'm ready a little disappointed because, as show? You know, I don't like to see a lot of politics in entertainment. So.
Damn it, Randy! All right, I'm gonna take a break and wring Randy's neck.
As always.
We're back with some new shows from HBO, and first one we're talking about this week is Crashing. Now, this is a comedy, although it wasn't a half hour. I feel like this first episode was like more like 40 minutes.
It might have been.
But this is Pete Holmes, Pete Holmes is this comedian who's been kind of doing stuff on a lot of other people's shows. He actually had his own show for a while called Pete Holmes Show.
For a little while, yeah. He did those Street Fighter and X-Men interviews that were hilarious.
And he also did those interviews where he'd talk to someone, but right before they'd do the interview, they'd bite a habanero, and then they'd try to interview each other, talk to each other. Hilarious. And anyway, this show is about... He is a former youth minister, an aspiring comedian, who's just this kind of miserable sad sack. And he comes home one day to find that his wife, who is financially supporting him, is also cheating on him. So he leaves her to go pursue his dream of being a professional comedian and crashing on other funnier people's couches along the way.
Yep.
Now, I liked this. I liked it well enough. I don't think I was blown away by this pilot episode. But I thought I got a good feel for what it kind of wants to do. It seems like kind of understated, but also seems to be a comedy show for comedians, like in the know. Yeah. And it seems to be like a lot of referential stuff, a lot of spotlighting other comedians that aren't necessarily like the big time big names, but people that have just been like doing the routine for a long time. And it doesn't go for like a lot of big laughs, big punchlines or anything. It has a couple big buildups that I think pay off pretty well. But overall, it just felt like a comfortable, easy riding show that I was like, okay, I get the premise. I can kind of roll with this. Each week he's going to run into a new person.
I didn't like it.
Yeah, you didn't like
this. I did not like it. And the thing is, I kind of expected to like this because I like Pete Holmes. I think he's funny. I find him likable. But he did this thing, and I've seen comedians do this before where they're playing a version of themselves, because this is a version of him. I guess he was a Christian comedian, all that kind of stuff. He plays this guy as a very unlikable, kind of a douche. He's like, his wife is sort of wanting to like be more sexually adventurous with him and all this kind of stuff. She tries to engage with him, and he basically shuts her down.
For our listeners who don't know what he's talking about, she did try to stick a finger up the butt. So, I mean, give him a little bit of leeway.
She asked
on the finger
first,
up the butt
and
stuff.
And then she said, maybe you could have fingered in my butt. She was willing to compromise.
I thought he was on board with the... Sorry, we're getting off topic here.
No, I just... For one thing, I like the actress who played his wife, Lauren Lapkus, who is a comedian. She was on Orange is the New Black and other stuff. And I like her. And I was just like... It's sort of asking you, it's kind of like when, you know, you saw the first episode of Divorce, which I hated, didn't dislike, I actually hated it. And on that one, there was no one to side with, like I hated all of them. This one, I was like, you know what, I'm kind of with his wife and her laid back boyfriend, Leaf. Like, I'm with them. I want those crazy kids to get together. I want to follow that story and let Pete fuck off and go be a comedian somewhere. But then when Pete goes to New York and meets Artie Lang, who I'm not necessarily a fan of, I don't know his stuff that well. The whole thing, everything with Artie Lang was hilarious to me. Artie Lang, like being like, don't follow my footsteps. What are you, crazy? I'm not successful at this.
Yeah.
And his running away from him when he gets mugged. Like, there's all kinds of stuff.
And when he crashes his car.
Yes.
Just keeps running away from situations.
All the Artie Lang stuff, I was like, I wish this was Crashing with Artie Lang.
Well, you know what this show could be is a different comedian each week who kind of steals the show from Pete Holmes.
It's kind of like that. It looks like TJ Miller's going to be in the next one.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Sarah Silverman.
Mm. I feel like that's a misuse of Pete Holmes, which is weird because it's his show. He's misusing himself. And if you do that enough, you go blind.
Well, do you know who directed this?
No.
Monsieur Judd Apatow.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
That guy is in with HBO.
That guy didn't know anything about comedy.
Yeah.
Although he did the Netflix show Love as well, I guess.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Yeah. And he produces Girls.
Kyle, what did you think of this show?
It was the first one I watched because I was most excited about it. And yeah, it left me a pinch disappointed in the first one. I really don't want to talk any shit about it because it wasn't bad. I recently saw the Robert De Niro movie, The Comedian, and that was surprisingly good for you know, the subject matter.
Isn't that Scorsese?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But it's the idea that we're going to go watch a movie about people standing up there and doing comedy. And the thing is, you can't just show somebody doing comedy. You have to show how awkward it is. Yeah. And how, you know, like the situations kind of is where like the real funny lies. But I feel like this show, it could get there. It's not there yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's reasonable. I think all comedy pilots are notoriously hard to get the tone right and everything. It's possible I'll wind up loving this show, but I did not like that first episode.
I think that the scene that rubbed me the wrong way the most was the prime opportunity they had to like make a really funny scene was when he actually has to go up on stage and he's bullied into it. And they sort of bait him on stage with, oh, you just went through a traumatic emotional moment with your wife. Remember Tig Notaro and how she did that right after cancer? Yep. That could be you.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was expecting if it was going to bomb, it was just going to, like, it would be relentless. Like, they would show it for longer.
Yeah.
Like, they showed it for just a little bit, and then they kind of cut away, and I'm like, okay, I got the feel like he just kind of did terribly there.
Yeah.
But I wanted it to, like, really make it excruciating.
Yeah.
Keep that beat going for a while until, like, we squirm, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, because the setup for that where the guy's like, I've never seen a minute of this guy's act. Either way, it's going to be hilarious for us.
Yeah.
Like, that was funny to me. And there was no payoff.
And I feel like I'm getting a little bit disappointed with how predictable it is in all television shows that when you have the buildup toward the big heroic moment, it's always a failure.
No. Yeah.
They never want to give you the big win, and because the more interesting thing is always have them not do it, have them fuck up. I'm like, give us a fucking win.
Yeah, I actually would have loved it if he'd gotten there and actually killed it.
Right?
Yeah.
That would have been fantastic.
Not even that, but why don't you do one of these comedian shows about a comedian who's really successful and like bad, depressing stuff doesn't happen to him?
Because none of them feel successful.
Exactly, but make that the joke, like, oh, I didn't have to work very hard at comedy at all. I just, you know, became a millionaire and, you know.
Yeah, that's called Real Rob and we didn't watch it.
That show's called Seinfeld.
He does
actually
really
that show
well.
Was called Seinfeld.
He has a great apartment and he loves cereal. That guy, he's such a wacky
and dates
card.
A lot of hot women, don't forget that part.
What's That's with all true. These taxes I can afford to pay?
What's with all my cars?
Well, let's go ahead and jump over to what I like to call Pretty Little Liars
and what HBO calls Big Little Lies.
I'm really
Big
curious to lies. See if you actually watched Pretty Little Liars or you watched whatever this show's called, Big Little Lies.
Grant, you have no idea how much I wish you had watched some Pretty Little Liars. You could do the whole bit on this.
That would be a really uncomfortable review.
I wish any of us had watched Pretty Little Liars so we could just make one joke in the situation.
Yeah, I don't really know. That was like high school girls that like all like
they're,
killed someone or something.
They're liars and they're pretty and they're really small. They're like 4 feet tall.
Oh my gosh, that's really little.
That's what I'm guessing. I haven't seen it.
Those are called prostatots.
So this is the show starring Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, Shailene Woodley, and
you
Laura Dern.
And Adam Scott.
My man.
One of the Skarsgård's dudes. I think that was the Tarzan guy.
Yep. Zoe Kravitz.
So they are all living in this just really wealthy, fancy beach community in California, Southern California. And Shailene Woodley moves there. She seems to be...
She's not as rich.
A fish out of water. Yeah, she seems a little bit poor. She doesn't seem to have a job. I don't even know how she's affording property. Whatever. Maybe that'll be answered later.
Yeah.
But she's living there, and she's just kind of taken under the wing by... I mean, if Tracy Flick from Election grew up, it's kind of Reese Witherspoon.
By the way,
there
this is the perfect like preppy white lady name. This Madeline Martha McKenzie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of this backstabbery vibe. It's very Desperate Housewives, but like even in a way, like amped up in intrigue and maliciousness.
Yeah, and it's no way. It's Desperate Housewives was fun. This is in no way fun.
Really?
This is deadly serious, I thought.
Huh.
I thought, man, I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I disagree with you on the deadly serious part.
I did not like this show like, at all.
For people who haven't seen it, the show kind of starts out, a crime has occurred of some type, and they're interviewing
There's been a murder, but we don't know who got murdered.
Yeah, they're interviewing all the people that are like part of this community, and I thought every single one of these interviews, like each person would be like, oh, something serious, but... let me tell you about this bitch. Like,
yeah. It was it's a bunch of, it's a city full of gossipy.
They're all catty. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't care about any of their problems. I'm like, these are all rich white people. I don't give a shit what their problems are.
Well, and a chip on your shoulder for rich white people.
You need to sell me on the fact that their problems are actually real. Cause most of the things I'm like, I'm not buying any of this. I don't give a shit about any of this.
Here's the thing. I don't think anybody in this show is going to have real problems. Like, unlike Crashing, like people aren't going to be looking for a couch to sleep on. Right. I think the pleasure of this show is going to be from watching these people just catfight and tear each other apart.
Yeah, and see, I don't do the soapy thing in general, and I feel like I thought from the promos, and this is on me, this is my expectations, from the promos and the way it was shot, I thought this was going to be like a California noir kind of thing.
It kind of is.
The look of everything would suggest that.
Yeah, the look of it is like a noir, but it plays like a melodrama, like an Empire kind of thing, and it's not... it's
even
not
the dialogue kind of plays like that, too. Yeah. Like, in the beginning, she's like, oh, have I... introduce you to my friend, here's how they fit into the story. It's like, yeah.
I don't know, I for some reason watched this whole thing and was really drawn to the performances,
really
drawn to the subtle things, like in the characterization. I really liked the scene with Reese Witherspoon, sorry, I'm having trouble with that name, talking to her daughters and talking about how she feels disconnected from her daughters. And that wasn't really necessarily a crucial plot point, but when she's like just feeling that loss of closeness with them from when they were kids, as she sees them growing up, you know, something about that resonated. I thought that was just a really well executed scene.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, that's what's interesting is I think that the acting is top notch across the board. The cinematography, like, it looks great, and the acting and the scenes are great. I just, the stakes aren't there for me. I don't care what happens to these characters.
Well, and you know, a big point of frustration for me is there seemed to be this character motivation from the dad, Nicole Kidman's husband, towards the end of the movie.
Yeah, the abusive guy.
Where he's like, my kids told me about some random thing at school and they just seem so confident about it. I'm now going to insist that they don't talk to this kid who was accused of this thing.
Yeah. It was a little weird.
And little kids shouldn't be abusive.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be a big abusive husband.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was clearly intentionally ironic, I guess, for his character to be like that. But I am kind of interested in figuring out who is the murderer. I appreciate that, you know, from what I heard of the background of this show, it was orchestrated by Reese Witherspoon. Fuck that name. But like, she has a very heavy female cast, and she has a lot of female people working behind the scenes to make this happen. And I think I like that behind the scenes mission statement, I guess, as well.
I do,
but
too.
I also really enjoyed the production value of this. I thought the artistry of how they kind of pepper in these scenes that like kind of jolt you out of, I guess, falling into the easy melodrama and reminding you like that there's something more sinister going on behind the scenes here. Pulling out the gun from the dresser, the nightstand, like all those little scenes. I was just kind of digging it.
It's also David E. Kelly is the guy sort of show running it, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. And he always does sort of quirky. This doesn't feel like David E. Kelly. I'll grant him that. His stuff always has sort of a weird quirky vibe to it.
Dancing baby.
This was not that. it wasn't what I was looking for. I don't know if it's just the genre or the story. I have friends who love the novel and were sad to hear that I didn't like the show, but maybe they will. I don't know. It just did not click with me.
Did you guys, when we were doing all this HBO watching, did you see the new HBO promotional material where it's essentially HBO, we got the ladies?
Yes, and I did see that.
Clips from like all their shows that have women on
them. Girls and Insecure and
Daenerys was in there.
Yeah.
Veep.
Yeah.
Like, did you just say that?
Yeah, that was a good. That was a good. And what I loved about it is that they didn't say like there's no tagline about we got the ladies. It's just it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good ad. It's a good promo.
Well, let's jump over to AMC, which just released its second season of Humans. Which are they, or are they robots?
They're robots.
They're all robots.
Sorry, spoilers. They're robots.
So anybody with pretty eyes, they're a robot.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
I'm so following. Explain the premise of this, because I never even watched the first season, let alone the second one.
This is a sort of near future. It's England, right? Isn't it? I mean, everybody has English accents.
Ooh, good.
I think
yeah.
it is England.
Yeah, yeah. No.
So. Where they've created what they call synthetics, which everyone can, they're affordable enough that like an upper middle class family can afford to have one. And they get these synthetics that come home. And so it's about this family that the dad goes out and gets a synthetic who has to be a beautiful girl, named Mia. And she's like she becomes like their domestic. She's the one who's like doing all these, all this stuff around the house. And then there's little things where there's like an adults only package that you can activate, and that gets activated. But in the first season, there was a robot resistance where someone were starting to develop artificial intelligence, and Mia was revealed to have been one of these robots.
Mm-hmm.
And so this group came together that was like one that was a former sex worker robot who was sort of went a little bit like Pris and Blade Runner, became a little violent.
Ah.
And then there was a guy who was like human but not entirely human, and they're basically like it became a sort of small robot resistance. And it was about these cops were investigating whether or not these AI had become human, that kind of thing. We pick up in season two, and one of these robots has gone off and has the code to make robots become sentient, and she's loosed that on the world. And then the other ones are sort of gathering it up, you know, gathering up these robots. And then Mia sort of has gone back to sort of hiding and pretending to be a servant synthetic.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting.
She kind of craves,
but also learning too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she kind of craves the being a part of a human society, which is interesting.
Yeah. Well, so anybody who's not watching this, if Westworld finished up and you were like, "Ooh, I got to get my fix."
Yeah. Yeah.
No cowboys here, but jump back into that drama where in season one, I think it was definitely like this idea of, you know, what makes them human, da-da. And you were talking about like the law enforcement agency that was hunting them down.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if this season they get more into like the legality of, you know, one of these machines. And like you actually see kind of the logistics behind, you know, court cases, you know, trying crimes that these machines have committed.
Right.
Well, and too, the, you know, like machines that become sentient, you know, what rights do they then have now that they have this, you know, intelligence?
Yeah. Well, it's not like a super exciting show. Like there's not like a lot of action, although they have chases and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's interesting sort of speculative sci-fi, I think.
Yeah. It's very much like a thinking show. Like,
yeah.
You get into these situations where it's, what do they call the robots in this? The
synthetics.
The synthetics. Where you got the synthetics and the humans and they're like interacting. And yeah, you kind of like with Westworld, you ask yourself like, what would I do in this situation? Yeah. Would I have sex with this robot? Like,
yeah, it's an interesting look, and it's AMC, but I believe it's a British company that produces. I think it's AMC co-producing with a British company, and it's one of their stronger shows. I actually thought coming back so far, I'm really enjoying it. I started thinking about this though the other day. This whole artificial intelligence, is it real? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
we always jump into this at a point where it's like, The line between human and AR is pretty thin. But if you think about it, like right now, if someone came to you and said, "Yeah, I'm going to marry my Roomba because I'm in love with it," you'd think they were a crazy person. And I want to see that bleeding edge. I want to see the people who are like, when it's basically everyone's like, "You can't be in love with your robot, dude. It's just a robot." I want to see that. I want to see that aspect. Because right now it's like the people, this and Westworld both put in this place where it's like the humans that are treating the robots like shit are assholes.
Yeah.
Like it is clear that the robots are human, basically. I want to go back a little bit and blur that edge, like maybe the guys who are just saying they're just robots have a point. You guys are fucked up.
I actually got the ultimatum that if I ever get the chance to have sex with like a humanoid like robot,
yeah,
that's officially cheating. Like, I can't do
what?
That. Yeah, my girlfriend said no to robot sex.
Well, I mean, at least you asked the question. See, that was your mistake.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly.
You asked the question. If you hadn't asked the question, it's left as a
That's what you get from dating somebody who talks about TV this much, because it starts with a who's on your list?
Yeah.
Well, where do we get into like synthetics? And you know.
So now you've drawn a line. You can't undraw that line.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, no sex with robots for you, Kyle.
Slow down, technology. Slow down. Don't tempt us.
So do not have sex with your Roomba.
All right, well, Grant,
don't you have sex with your Roomba either.
Don't tell me what to do. Don't tell us how to live our love life. Anyway, guys, we have to talk about Legion.
Yeah.
We need to.
Yeah.
Because, oh, man, it's so good.
Yeah.
All right, here, Kyle, take this. All right. All right, so Legion just hit its third episode over on FX, and this one got dark, guys.
Yeah.
This, like, at times, this was like a straight-up horror movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It also did some interesting things, like, you know, like that window in the background looked like a Professor X.
Yep.
They had that scene at the end of the episode where David's sitting on one wall of the bathroom and Sid comes in and sits on the other wall, mm-hmm. and he's in the yellow light and she's in the blue light, which was very yellow and blue X-Men, I thought. Ooh. I was like, oh, that's kind
of
cool.
By the way, the some of the scenes in here, when you see the yellow-eyed man,
oh, yeah.
that was creepy. And then the hands coming out of the little red rent in the wall.
Oh, yeah.
That was creepy. By the way, I think it's interesting that she can see that, but nobody else can. I assume that's because they switch bodies at some point.
She's been him.
She's been him before.
Yeah.
She's been inside him. Whoa. My escalating theory on this is what's real and what's not. And I started off, you remember my theory in Mr. Robot early on was that everything wasn't real.
Yeah.
I always overcorrect with the, oh, nothing's real. Uh-huh. It's all fake. And I did the same thing here. I've now come to realize that
everyone's a robot in Westworld.
Everyone's a robot.
Uh-huh.
The proto X-Men are all real. Like Gene Smart's character and his girlfriend and the guy who does memory. Those are all real people. I'm sure of that now. I'm still not sure that whether or not Lenny is. I'm not sure if Lenny was ever real or if she's always been his Tyler Durden or if she was real and then became his Tyler Durden now.
So here's the thing. I had a theory about this.
Okay.
And I think I called it.
Okay.
If they don't confirm this in the next episode, I'm going to be, all right. When he sees Lenny in the mental hospital, my theory is that that's the real Lenny.
Okay.
Unless we find out that the mental hospital is fake, whatever. But that's the real Lenny, okay? When he then has the memory of them doing drugs, she's not really there.
So that's projecting her out of guilt into his memories?
No. She lives in his head now,
yeah.
And she can go around the memories just like he can, so she's inserting herself. So that stove they have,
yeah.
That is the stove in the freak out kitchen scene. That's the stove from that.
Yeah.
She's literally taking items from his other memories.
They put them in there?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I like that idea.
But she isn't living in, like, how's that work? Like, it's one thing, like, he's walking through his memories and seeing those in the past, but she's existing within his memories.
Well, you got to remember a couple things.
With his memory self, not his true self.
You got to remember a couple things. One is that he's a telepath
and
has numerous other powers. Like, he's got not only that, but telekinesis and teleportation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has all kinds of powers. And that when Lenny was killed, it was when Sid was him and she was using his powers. So she's got the ability to sort of transpose mental states as well. So if you combine his telepathy and her ability to transport brains into different bodies, it would make sense that when he killed Lenny, something transported her consciousness into his consciousness. I think that's a possibility. I also think that it may be that Lenny's pattern is being influenced by what is obviously the Shadow King. That because she seems somewhat malevolent where she wasn't before.
It's got to be Shadow King, right? Do you think that's, like, I saw someone hold up, like, pictures of him.
Yeah.
Like, there's a scene where there's a drawing someone's making of him. And then you look at that, like, exact angle, and then you look at that yellow-eyed person.
Yeah.
And it looks like it might be him in makeup playing that creature as well.
Ah.
Which would be this evil version of himself.
Yeah. See, that's the big question I have. Is the Shadow King someone else who got trapped in his memories? Is he another persona? Or is he a splintered part of David's mind?
Ah.
Like,
as well as the angriest boy in the world.
It's also splintered. Because that's the thing. He is multiple personality. We know that. And so the question is whether or not Shadow King is an outside influence or a personality that he created and now has lost control of and doesn't even know it's there.
I think it'd be really interesting if the Shadow King, possibly maybe all these other personalities that he may or may not have like in him, like if they were conspiring using this like memory technique to bring other people in to kind of like consume them without David realizing.
Well, it would make sense because the show's called Legion, which means multiple personalities, you know?
It ends on that scene with all those people yelling at him in his mind. Like there's so many that are already there, but we're not seeing any sort of manifestations of them.
Right.
I also thought it was interesting that line he says where he's like, they think that it's just telepathy, but who's to say I'm not also crazy with these powers?
Yeah. I also liked the, what is it? The Eye, I think is his name. The guy who's sort of torturing his sister. Yeah. Who goes over and sees his astral form when they're there witnessing everything.
That made me think he's like some Hellfire Club kind of person or something.
Well, he's definitely got abilities.
Yeah.
For sure he's got abilities.
In a way, I kind of wish they would spell it out a little bit more for us, but also in a way, I like that they don't.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in the same place. And honestly... At this point, Noah Hawley can do whatever he wants, and I will watch it.
Yeah.
The visuals here are spectacular.
Dude, whoever he's got working on that with him, brilliant.
Yeah, this is really good.
Those ending, like when the credits roll, those have been some gut punches.
Yeah.
Always leave you on these like great cliffhangers, and then that really weird title, like credit card sequence.
It's not credit 80s, card, but it's like an title. 80s end credits,
Very mod squad.
You know what? I mean, it almost feels a little early 90s Martin-ish.
I could see that. Yeah.
I'm the man.
What I'm interested in is that it's only an 8-episode show, right?
Oh,
no.
I think it's only 8 episodes.
Miniseries?
Yeah.
Or second season?
Maybe, but I'm kind of glad of that because it means that they're not going to have a lot of time to just mess around. Like, we're going to get story just dialing through.
I mean, we have 3 episodes and he's been in 2 places. Like, I feel like they're taking their time unpacking a lot of back history here rather than driving any sort of like larger story. Is this all like really just like some introspective exercise, or are we going to see the bigger threat that Gene Smart's character like wants him to kind of fight against?
See, I think that's gonna be more abstract. I did like they addressed that. She's like, "You're the most powerful mutant. We're losing a fight," and I like the line where she's like, "No, I wanted to be happy. I wanted to be healthy, and then I want to use him."
Yeah. We discussed last week about Sid's abilities, and I think we sort of misidentified what her abilities were because. Like you were saying, like, oh, she's pyrotechnic.
I thought she was pyrokinetic.
Which, you know, pyrokinetic, I guess, which would make sense with, like, all those burning bodies. And maybe she is. Maybe she still has some sort of ability. I think
that other girl was the pyrokinetic one.
Oh.
No, maybe there was a girl with darker skin and longer hair.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it turns out that Sid's abilities is that she can touch someone and sort of Freaky Friday them or whatever. Like father, like son, or... There's a ton of movies.
Yeah,
like
no,
that.
Keep naming them.
The Parent Trap? Did they switch bodies?
No, that's Parent
what
Trap.
What was the Patty Duke one where they did switch bodies? That was the original Freaky Friday. Never mind.
At any rate, this is a great X-Men show. Like I love that we're getting sort of a this is what it looks like when you join Xavier's Institute, even though it isn't Xavier's.
I kind of wish we saw some more of those characters.
You know what I like about Summerwood? Or the name of the institute they're at.
Something like that, yeah.
Gifted youngsters. Yeah.
What I like about this is, like, if one of us had mutant powers and we found out we were going to the X-Men Academy, it'd be like, shit, I know all the X-Men. This is going to be great. Am I going to get to meet Wolverine? Like, this is so cool. But if it happened in real life, we probably wouldn't know who these people are. They'd be existing in secret. And it'd feel kind of like, wait, am I at the right place? Is this sketch, you know, do I belong here? And I love the uncertainty. Like, you don't know necessarily if this is a good or bad place, and the characters address that.
Yeah. Also, why do you assume I don't have mutant powers?
The people there?
No, me. You just made this assumption that none of us have been at the Xavier Academy. And I don't know. I feel like Grant has possibly been to Xavier's.
Is that, that's that bar down on 6th Street?
Yeah.
Sounds like a barber shop.
Wasted there one time. Everywhere. If I have a mutant ability, it is to just projectile vomit.
That's a mutant ability.
Yeah, that's a gross one. I belong in the sewers with the Morlocks.
The next evolution of humans, the ability to vomit.
So what about the guy that's running the fucking machine, the doctor?
Yeah.
And his assistant. Is that like he's able to project another version, like an assistant out of him?
Maybe.
It's because possible. She like keeps popping out and yeah. she's not there and then she is there.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's able to have a second person. He has a young Asian woman living inside of him.
Well, maybe it's like Krieger in Archer. It's just a hologram.
That's it. Oh,
it's just holographic bride.
Well, do you guys remember it was like an animal cage of some type in the first episode?
No, I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, there was an animal cage in the room that he kept looking at, and the camera kept panning over to this cage, like a dog or something was in there. And yeah, I kept thinking, like, is that some link to his... to this guy's ability.
Well, they also had that the Fro dude, the evil Fro torturing his sister mm-hmm. guy.
Yep.
They had him in the first episode like carving a wooden panther.
Yeah.
And then you hear like this animal like noise growling down the hallway.
That's yeah. what I'm talking
that
about.
That was supposed to be like this threat that was gonna come get him. And I was like, is he like that guy who like can carve totems and make them real or something?
I don't know.
But then all of a sudden he's also like able to see astral projections and stuff. I'm like, I don't know who has what abilities or if they all have 10 abilities uh-huh. or what.
Yeah.
It's nuts, but I'm really excited. They'll get a little bit of everything. Oh yeah. I mean, after we watch this, going back and rewatching to like make sense of what they were doing in these mm-hmm. first few episodes is going to be so enriching.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it. If you guys want to hear more thoughts, once again, go check out Marvel Binge on TV. Is that the name of it?
Marvel TV Binge.
Marvel TV Binge. I'm going to mess it up every time. I'm sorry, guys. Ah. But go check that out on our net podcast network, Permanent Record.
Permanent Record.
And they will be talking about it much more in depth. Kyle was on last week's episode.
Yeah, talk episode 2. Got to throw some theories out there. My leading theory was that the frog vaporizer from episode 2 came from Noah Hawley's man cave. And he was like, you got to put this in the show.
It's in his contract.
Yeah.
Well, all right, we're going to call it a wrap here for this week, but hey, if you guys have any questions, you guys want to get back in touch with us, you guys want to give us some money or give us a 5-star review, you guys know how to do all of that. And until next week, Randy.
TV Dudes out.
Oh.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.